In Vadein Gershom, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So the point is that over here, if we see that something is happening to the plants, that they're not doing what they're supposed to do, they've changed color, or you don't find that, for example, in the grain, you know, that the grain is not producing, it's just empty and so on and so forth. This is an alarming state, and therefore you have to immediately pray to the Rabbeinu Shalom for rain. Okay. Now, inasmuch as we speak about rain, so, you know, we'll continue and we'll see that there are other things, too, for which we have to arouse the community to prayer. The Chen Shepasko Geshomim, I'm back to the Mishnah, right? And likewise, let's say that there was no rain. Rain stopped. Ben Geshem Le Geshem Aboim Yo. Masri and Alehem. Let's say that a 40-day period passed between the last time that there was rain and there's still no rain when after 40 days have passed. So, in that case, again, Masri and Alehem. So you have to sound the alarm, Davin and so on for them, Mipnei Shehi Makas Batzoris, because this is the affliction of Batzoris. How do we translate Batzoris? So normally we translate the word Batzoris as being a drought. Okay? In other words, this means this is really a drought if 40 days have gone by without any rain, whatever.
This is during the rainy season.
Yeah, not sure you're talking about the rainy season when it should be. I'm not talking about the summertime in Eretz Yisrael, when you can see clouds up in the sky and nothing ever happens, you know. In Yerushalayim particularly, you see that. Not that it only rains once or twice a year, but there are only certain periods during the year in which rain falls. During the rainy period, you can have several days in a row of rain. This is possible. You understand? It's not once or twice in the sense that there are only 2 days of rain. No. In the summer, you don't have any rain. It's a normal rule. It's no rain. Not only that, if you've been watching, you know, the way I watch every day to see what's the temperature in Yerushalayim, what's the weather over there. They had beautiful weather. In fact, if anything, it's been too hot for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And Sukkot was delightful, 80-degree temperatures, clear, and so on. I mean,
they even gave a dispensation to people from the Kotel.
To what?
They gave him a dispensation. They could drink water every 9 minutes or so.
Oh, that's because of the heat. Yeah, doesn't mean everybody took advantage of it, but there were some people, you know, who obviously were overcome by the heat and the fasting and so on. So in that case, I mean, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, you know, to revive them so that they could
drink. Yeah, never.
Right. Yeah. All right.
Batsoret is still used today as drought, or is
it? Pardon me?
Batsoret is also drought.
Yeah. The verb itself, yibatser, you know, we have that, for example, for the first time mentioned in the story about building the Tower of Babel. We'll be coming to it this week, okay? It's written over there, V'yatah lo yibatser mehem kol sheyozmu la'asos. In other words, nothing will be withheld from them. Everything that they plan to do, you know, these people are able actually to get up to heaven, you know, climbing and so. And therefore, the Rebbeinu Shalom decided, you know, to change their languages, right, so that they wouldn't be able to cooperate in this anti-God movement. Okay. Now, another case: Yodu Tzmochim. Let's say that rain fell for plants. Avolo yodu le'ilan, but rain did not fall for a tree. Of course, what it means is, you know, that the rain fell, let's say, in a sufficient quantity in order to support vegetation on the ground, but not enough in order to support trees. Or just the other way around, le'ilan. Let's say there was enough rain for trees, but not for lo litzmochim, right? But not for plants, not for vegetation. Or let's take another case. Let's say that there was a sufficient amount of rain for plants and for trees, but there was not enough water that fell, not enough rainfall in order to fill boros. Bor is, you know, a pit that you make in the ground in order to hold water in it, right? Leshichin. Shichin, these are like trenches that they would build. Okay, that I don't mean built. I mean that they would, you know, make in the soil over there in order also that should hold water. Lima oros, and also for water in the caves, because very often what they did is to store water in the caves. Why did they store water in the caves?
Cool.
It's cool, exactly. So, you know, it's protected from the hot sun, so it didn't evaporate. It's exactly what it is. So, what if there wasn't enough water, in other words, to be stored up, you know, for human consumption, when they needed them, when we would need it? So, in that case, again, Masvina the hen miyad, so that they have to, again, you know, they have to sound the alarm and pray. V'chein ir, likewise a city, shal yodu alech geshomim. Let's say a city upon which rain did not fall. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, a very famous Pasuk in Amos, where it says, him tarti al irachas, he says over there, that Rabbeinu Shalom says, I have brought rain upon one city, yal irachas v'yamtir. And upon another city, I did not bring rain. Chelko achas timoter, right? One area of land had rain, okay? And the rest of the pasuk says, chelko achas lo simoter lecho, right? Mm-hmm. And the second, another one, you know, had no rainfall upon it. So, in that case, what? Then the affected area, they have to proclaim fast and pray to God for rain, right? So this is as he says, Oiso ha'ir, that city misano umasras, right? That city has to fast, and also it has to, you know, blow shofar, and it has to, you know, do all those extra prayers and so on and so forth. Also v'chol tzivivoseho, and all those surrounding towns. Nisanos, they also have to fast together with it, but below Masrios, but they don't have to sound the alarm. They don't have to blow shofar or anything like that. Okay? Let's take a look at the Rashi on the top over there. It says, he says, Nisanos, for this reason they fast. She'oso ha'ir, she'lo yodo leho geshomim, you know, that city upon which rain has not fallen, telech lignoi satvur biyoso ir. So if the people in that city will go into a city where rain has fallen, where there is food, but they'll buy up all the food, then what will happen in that, you know, in the second city? Right? There'll be hunger in the city too. So that therefore, even the surrounding areas, they have to pray. And of course we could say that there's also a more spiritual reason as well, and that is that if you see a Jew who is suffering, so you have to suffer along with him. I mean, so that these cities, even though they were blessed to the extent, you know, that they had rain falling upon them, but nevertheless, they also have to understand, as we would say, the tsar, you know, the pain, the anguish of the city, you know, which was suffering from drought, and pray on its behalf, together with the other people. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva says that the latter ones, he says, Masrios velo misanos, says that they sound the alarm and, you know, they say the prayers, but they don't have to fast. That's what he says. But I tell you that the halacha doesn't follow Rabbi Akiva in this particular case, and follows instead what we said, that even the surrounding cities also have to join in the fasting and so on. And again, I told you from time to time, how do you know where the din is? The answer is, that's why we have these little letters over there on top and the side. Okay, you notice on top line, there's an aleph over there?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, now what does the aleph mean? So you have to go to the side margin over there, and you see aleph over there.
Right.
Okay, there's a big base, first of all, but that's not what we have to look at. We have to look on the initial page. Right after the base, you see there's a little aleph over there.
Yeah. Right.
That's a little aleph, okay. And it gives you the sources, you know, where it becomes incorporated in the standard codes. Like the first one that he has is Maimon. In other words, you know, the Maimonides, Yod HaTzokhan, the Rambam, you know. So it's Perek Beis, Mehilchos Tanis. Okay? So you'll find it, you know, in the second chapter of Hilchos Tainis, Halacha Beis. And how about Tur Shulchan Aruch, which means, you know, both in the Tur and in the Shulchan Aruch? So the answer is, you find it in the Aleph Ches. What's the Aleph Ches? That's the Orach Chaim. In other words, that's the first part of the Shulchan Aruch. And it's a simon, you see the simon number over there, Tav Kuf Ayin Vav. So if we would take, for example, the Mishnah Brura, which also contains the text of the Orach Chaim, so we would find it listed over there. And it would be, see, if Aleph would be the first paragraph, and also see if you'd base, paragraph 12 as well. So that this is an easy way to know, you know, that this statement in the Gemara has become accepted as being the halacha. Now, do we find any for Rabbi Akiva in Masrusel Misanos? No. So it means what?
That it's not halacha.
Right. That his opinion is his opinion, but it was not accepted as halacha.
But
yes.
I'm sorry to get off the track, but
yeah.
How can I say this? Rav or Munka actually made the
decision.
No, the the appendix, this index. I mean, someone.
No, of course. Right, we take a look at the beginning of the Gemara over there. They list some of the people, you know, that you find over here. Okay. Now this is, for example, a Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. Okay. So you take a look over here. Ein Mishpat LaGoyin, right? Yosef Shmuel, right? Zichrono LeBracha, right? This is the name of the author, and he was Av Beis Din Tehila Kadisha Papadam. In other words, he was the Rav in the city of Frankfurt am Main.
Is it an English word?
Yeah.
Is that why the Haftorah of Frankfurt am Main was different?
They had their own Menhagim over there.
Yeah, you know? in the Ars Scroll, yeah. It points out the Frankfurt am Main finish here.
Yeah. Well, actually, before that, there's another reference on it. But before Kodesid of Achiba HaGon, Moshe Boaz, Zal, or Mechab Bishil HaGegon, Harif. All right, so in other words, there's several different ones, and then they read it. Yeah. But that's what it says over there, okay? And then you'll find, you know, some other people. I mean, these are, you know, some of the standard ones, and then in addition, they add others, like, for example, the Maharshal, the Maharshaw, and so on and so forth, okay? As you can see from the title page over here.
What do they list in Mishpat?
Would they list what?
In Mishpat.
Take a look over here. You see, Mr. Shah is in Mishpat.
Right.
Okay. So that these are some of the things that we find.
Oh, okay.
All right. Point.
Thank you very much.
The difference is that Akiva and Tama is switching around. What is the meaning? What is the value of the Tanas and the Shears? Are they doing the same? I swear it's really Tanas. And yet the Halacha is not like them, which means the essence of these Tanas, the Shears, that is, that became Halacha because of the full meaning of what is the reason of like this, what is it supposed to mean, the interchangeability of these Tanas and the Shears. It seems to me that these Tanas itself, which happens to be the Tanakama, engaging in kindness and carrying the burden with your fellow, as you mentioned before, through his kindness, it would seem to me that it is much more of an investment of the person who really feels against my house of the Sana. The Loy Masriyas, if you say that Masriyas means that anger or even if it means Borim Shaka, that should come easier. In other words, if something becomes a Sahara, something is a Sahara, so that for sure that should be the easiest part of it. So Tanakama would have said, Matsuyas. And the reason why it could be Tanakama probably is because that the person feels rather corporal, it feels rather...
No, there's no question. When you actually have to fast, you certainly are more engaged in it. I mean, simply for dumping, there's no question. Right.
Yeah. Which means you don't oblige them. You don't engage them so much. You don't commit them.
Right.
If they could even
there's no question. He was much easier upon the, you know, the Svigo Sefa. I mean, this is really what we're talking about. In other words, surrounding cities. Yes.
This is conscience. However, actually, we are explained that because of no pure motive. So, Rashi explained that the reason why he is concerned with Tainus because maybe they're going to die from them all the week, and they themselves are going to fall into poverty.
Yeah, well, we mentioned that, right? Yeah.
So in that case, according to Rashi, why would they be dishonest? They would be dishonest for themselves. What are they dishonest? They would be dishonest that they should not be in a position of becoming poor people, becoming
But see, there's something here. They're not going to become poor. They're going to become famished. But they're going to be wealthy as they become famished.
Well, they'll make some money, but the question is, right? But the time comes when the money can't buy, as we'll see a little bit later on in the Gemara. I mean, that they could reach that stage too, you know. Yeah.
But in essence, that takes away a lot from the dishonest, if you say dishonest, because most of the olim chadar, because you carry the burden of your parents, then you say dishonest. If you say dishonest because of yourself, you know you're not being famished. Then we
start
to go back and you see what is
the chance, right? Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, I pointed out that Rashi's time, you know, is one thing, but we could understand, as I said, you know, that it's even more important. I mean, that is that we have to feel for our fellow man, and this is the reason why, you know, the Sfigur Sehu, you know, that they also engage in fasting and so on. All right, let me get by. V'chein ir sheyesh bo dever. And likewise, what if there is a city in which a plague is occurring? Homopolis. Or city in which all of a sudden the houses all fall down. Now naturally, why would they all fall down? The answer is an earthquake, exactly. An earthquake causes them to fall down. So, what happens in that case? So in that particular case, then the people in that city, they have to fast, and they have to, you know, be masvir, they have to blow shofar, they have to daven with extra kavod and so on. And the other towns, you know, in the area, they do fast, but they don't blow the shofar and so on. And Rabbi Akiva, again, is just the opposite, right? Rabbi Akiva, masri say misanois. All right. So now they want to give a definition. What do we mean by dever? Ezehu dever. What do we mean by plague? You know, that we have to immediately tell people go out and fast and, you know, sound the alarm and so on and so forth. Okay? He says, Ir ha-motzia chamesh meos ragli. A city, for example, that has a large enough population in order to provide 500, literally, foot soldiers. In other words, 500 able-bodied young men. Okay? Doesn't mean necessarily for the army. But if you remember, you know, the giving of the census that we find in the Torah, you know, so, like, for example, when the people of Israel went out, you know, from Egypt, so it's Sheshmeo Selef Ragli, right? That the 600,000, literally, you know, who were manly enough, you know, in order to be, you know, they were mature and able-bodied, so to speak, okay? So, in a city which has a large enough population for 500 mature young men, and they died in that city. There were three deaths that occurred over there over 3 days. In other words, one each day, 3 days in a row, right? Then in that case, Hareza Dever. So this is what we mean by plague, because it means if every day there's going to be a death because of this illness, then it's already a contagious affair, and you know, you have to do something about it. But pachis bekan, what if there is less than this? As for example, let's say only two people passed away, or it wasn't over 3 days in a row, then ain zedever. So this is not a plague. Now, Alevu Masriim Bechomokim. Now they continue and they say, for these things you have to, again, you have to be Masriya, you have to blow shofar and pray. Bechomokim, wherever it may be. In other words, not just in a particular locality, but maybe in a much larger area as well. What? Al Hashidophon. This is for what they call in English blast. You know, what's blast? Blast means that the wind is so strong that it just knocks out, you know, the grain, okay? The Al HaYerokon, Yerokon means that it turns yellow, or green if you wish, but it doesn't mean green in the sense, you see, that's why yellow is a better translation over here, Adivirakon, that the plant turns yellow. In other words, you know, you see that it's dying, you see, this is what it is.
This is what Parochat is shut up on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you remember the word Shidafon, you know that Shidufos Kodim, right? That Pharaoh had this dream and so on. He saw that, you know, the Shibolim, right? You know, the ears of corn were Shidufos Kodim, right? That they had been blasted by the east wind. In other words, wasted away. They've been for nothing. Because of, yeah. The Al Ha'arbe, the Al Ha'chosil, or if you have infestations, plagues of locusts, because there are different words used for locusts in the Bible. Arbe, Chasil, Govai, Lekesh. These are just, obviously, they're all different species of locusts. But what is their common denominator? That they eat up the crops, no matter what it may be. I've seen, for example, a translation of grasshoppers. To me, if it's a grasshopper, it's something that I find in my backyard sometimes, but I don't see that it, you know, produces any problems. But when you have plagues of whole swarms, this is already a different story. Mm. Yeah.
Grasshopper would be chagav, right?
Yeah, yeah. As I say, there are different words, you know, that refer to the various types of locusts, okay? So, if you see plagues of locusts coming, or the alachaya ro'ot, or for wild beasts, in other words, wild beasts are infesting an area and eating up people, right? Or attacking. The alacheret, or literally for the sword, but of course it means, you know, if there's an army that's threatening you, so in that particular case, masrin olecha, then you have to be masri, you have to blow shofar, you have to daven, and so on and so forth. Why? Ipnei shehi mako mehaleches. Because this is a maka that's going to spread. In other words, not simply in one particular area. Remember before he said, you know, mchol mokim, he said everywhere they should do it. Why? Because if you hear about it here, but the chances are that something like this could spread from here to the next point, and you will eventually be affected. So therefore you should also join in into, you know, masrin. Okay?
Nowadays we can't go that way. We hear things that are so remote from us because we've got the TV. I mean, we can't possibly do this.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's an earthquake in Japan.
Right, right. Which may affect people in California or Hawaii.
Rwanda, this definition of a plague where people die.
Usually we would have only heard of that if we were close or within walking distance,
right,
let's say, of Rwanda.
Yeah.
Now we're not within walking distance, as it were. And
well, okay, so we understand that times have changed in this respect. It's true that we're more aware of what's happening in very remote places, you know, that could be thousands of miles away. That's correct. In those days, they were limited as to, you know, when news reached them as to when a calamity was taking place someplace else. No question about it.
So now then, I mean, even if we, heaven forbid, hear of some calamity in Israel, it's not going to spread to the United States. So if we cry out,
it
depends what kind of calamity.
Needless
it is,
to say,
yeah.
Right. I mean,
we feel that anti-Semitism,
The world gangs up on Israel is going to affect us here in America
case, that's
too.
That's
Al-Hacherev
is there, but I mean, if there's locusts, even though locusts obviously can infest here, it wouldn't be the related locusts.
Right. Actually, there are parts of the country where it does come.
They're not going to be the same.
Southwest or something like that.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the same swarm, however, that's coming from Africa across the Atlantic.
Right, correct.
In that sense.
Yeah, but every once in a while there are still plagues of locusts that affect. Let's say Egypt is affected, and Phoenicia could come up already.
We can suffer economically if the stock market depends on that, etc. I mean, we do suffer.
Right, right, absolutely. Look what happened, the whole business with the oil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but are you saying that you would not, it's not mandatory, but I suppose it would be permissible for us to say prayers on behalf? I mean, it's. But he's saying it's similar to
you. Yeah.
But,
essentially, we'll see as to whether, you know, if it's going to help, if there's a possibility that it will help, then in that case, certainly we should do it.
But are we helping them, or are we helping us now?
Well, it could be both. It could be that our disinterest is also our own self-interest.
But when we're talking about the prices, when the neighboring village will buy food from us and take our food away, we're therefore praying for ourselves selfishly. It's not
an altruistic thing.
So here, if it's not going to affect us and we're praying, then it's an altruistic thing. It's not following the same logic as this.
Okay, as I said before, I mean, we have both disinterest and also self-interest.
Well, we're empathetic.
Yeah, absolutely. No question that we will be affected in one way or another by this, and that's the reason why he says we should, pray on behalf of us. Okay. All right. Now, it tells a little story. Okay, he says, Maaseh, story about Sheyodos Kenim Yerushalayim Lo Rehem, that elders left Jerusalem. Of course, who were these elders? The answer is, these elders of the Sanhedrin, probably. Okay? So they were sent out from Yerushalayim, and they went to various areas in Eretz Yisrael, right? The Gozru Tainis, and they proclaimed, they decreed that you have to fast. For what reason? Al Shinira Kimloi Pit Tanu Shidofon, the Ashkelon. Because there appeared just enough of this blast, as we said before, an Ashkelon, in order to fill the front part of an oven. In other words, if you would bake, a certain amount of bread, and just that quantity itself was enough already, and it appeared only in one city, where? In Ashkelon. So if it appeared in Ashkelon, then they were afraid that this was going to spread to other parts of Israel, and this is why they sent members of the Sanhedrin to other parts of Eretz Israel, that they should proclaim fast all over there, so that, chas v'sholem, that they themselves should not be affected. Okay? V'yod gozru tanis al she'ochun zeirim shtein nokeis bevayadim. And another fast was proclaimed because wolves ate two babies in the other side of the Jordan, in Transjordan. Okay? And again, we would say, look, Eber HaYarden, that's far already from, let's say, a good part of Eretz Yisrael, right? Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, when they heard, that wolves, attacked two children over there, so they felt, that they had to proclaim a tainis not only in the immediate area where, the wolves were seen, but again throughout Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi says, Lo al she'ochlu, he says, actually the wolves did not eat these children. Ella al she'niro, they appeared, and obviously there was a threat, that they were attacking the children. But it doesn't mean necessarily that they killed the children. But even that is enough grounds in order to proclaim a fast. It's enough of an emergency that they should, that they should fast, okay? Should but fast.
The art scroll is more acceptable to me here.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. Because the art scroll reads it, the fast was decreed not because the wolves had devoured anyone, but merely because they had been seen in the city. Which, the way I read it, means the wolves did in fact eat the children, but that's... Okay, because it's a she'ochlu, right? And it's not because the wolves had devoured anyone, but merely because they'd been seen in the city. I think that's the way.
So what did I say?
I think the first one says
she'ochlu ze'evim, right, that they ate, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Then Rabbi Yossi says, lo al she'ochlu, actually they didn't eat them.
Oh, well, maybe I'm reading it.
Ela al she'niro, but simply because they appeared.
Okay, so I'm reading.
The very fact that there was appearance of two wolves already is a dangerous situation. If it was one wolf, it's one wolf, but when you have more than one wolf attacking, so that's what they were afraid of.
Okay, so it's me reading it differently. It's not the Asko. Forget that. Because I'm reading it as
the word city doesn't occur in the text of it.
I mean, that's why I'm curious why Asko says the city.
Well, Asko Hatabeset, as we say.
Okay, but I'm saying that the fast was declared not because the children had been eating, but simply because wolves had been seen. Right. Even though the children were eating, we're not fasting because of the
killing of the children because the wolves were visible and therefore visible to other people. That's the way I'm reading it.
Well, the wolves were visible. There's all of a sudden not just one wolf appeared, but more than one wolf, right? So immediately it meant, you know, that there was danger to the people in the area.
You're interpreting it that this sequence of events, the wolves ate the children.
Yes, they really did eat the children. But we're not fasting because of that. We're fasting because the wolves were visible.
Subsequent to that,
the wolves were visible. That's the way I'm reading it, yeah.
I think we're giving a fetch over there, which I don't think is really an interpretation.
Maybe a sign of why they appeared in the city in the guise of the famine.
Well,
because the wolves were seeking food too.
Yeah, this is possible, right. But it doesn't say so. I mean, I see what you're saying. You're tying in with the whole idea of the famine, right. It may be, but it's not hinted at over here. What's hinted at is simply the fact that there are certain dangerous situations wherein we have to pray. Okay? And what are dangerous situations? If you have chayra, right? In other words, if you have wild animals that suddenly start in to attack, human beings, you see. So this is a dangerous situation. They gave the example about the two wolves. But that was, you know, as an example of the chayra, of animals attacking. So, if you see a pack of dogs, it could be a very frightening experience.
Yes, I've seen them in Springfield.
Right, right. Yes. You're right. Your grandfather died of rabies. Leibishes Zillens hidden. Yeah. Okay, weiter. Aleilam Asriim b'Shabbos. Now, even on Shabbos, when normally it's not a time, you know, to say, to blow shofar or to say Aneinu or something of like that, because, you know, normally it goes against the spirit of Shabbos. But on Shabbos too, if there is a dire emergency, then in that case, Asriim b'Shabbos. And they give some examples. Example. For example, a city which came, of course, the Jewish population and was surrounded by goyim, goyish armies that were threatening, you know, to kill the Jews in the town. This is a good reason, you know, to pray, to cry out to God, and so on, okay? Even on Shabbos. Or, Onohar, for example, a river, you know, overflowed its banks and threatened to sweep away the inhabitants. Okay, this, of course, we've seen, you know,
locally,
even in the Mississippi and so on, right? The Al Hasfina Mitorefes Bayom, or for a ship which we can see is struggling in the sea and, you know, and the looks of it's foundering, it's ready to fall apart over there. Rabbi Yossi Omer. So Rabbi Yossi says, no, you're not allowed actually to be Masriya. He says, you can do it le'ezra, you can do it, you know, okay, to pray to God that they should be helped, or even to go out and to volunteer help for them, which is even more important, right? But below litzoka, that it's not proper, you know, to introduce such prayers in the davening. This is Rabbi Yossi's opinion, okay? So, in other words, you shouldn't destroy the spirit of the Shabbos by that, but if you can possibly help them in whatever way you can, in that case, it's a mitzvah to violate Shabbos in order to help people, who are in danger. As we know, I mean, pikuach nefesh leichas haShabbos, right? That in order to save human lives, this will set aside the laws of Shabbos, right? Shimon HaTimni Omer, Shimon HaTimni said, Afal HaDeber, says in his opinion that if there is a plague, they should also pray on Shabbos in order to that God should
relieve
the plague and so on. But for the Hodu lo Chachamim, but the sages did not agree with him. Then the next part of the Mishnah says, "I'll call tzora shalei tovo, for any tzora may it not come." Al HaTzibor, which might befall the entire community, then masrin alayhim. Then you have to say aneinu, you have to blow shofar, whatever the opinion is, what we mean by masriya, but you have to do something, okay? Chutz, except meirov gishamim, except if the problem is that there's an abundance of rain, there's too much rain. Of course, there are times that we've had day after day of rain and so on. We would have been happy at times, you know, if there was a little cessation so we could see what the sun looks like or something like that. But for this, we don't try to diminish it and put a stop to the rain, please, because we know that there are values in the rain regardless, okay? So, now they tell a very famous story over here in the Mishnah. It says, Masa. The story told about She'omru le'lechoni ha'ma'agel. They said to Choni, literally, the circle man, ha'ma'agel. Okay, igul in Hebrew is a circle, okay? So they said to Choni, the circle man, they said to him, his pale'el she'yerdu gishomim, pray so that rain should fall. O'malahem, so he said to them, Tzu'u v'achnisu tanu'e p'sochim v'shvir shelo yimoku. Says, you know what? Go gather into your homes the stoves that normally you use in order to roast, you know, the Korban Pesach into your homes. Bring them into your houses because Bishvil Shelo Yimoku. Because if rain falls, you know what's going to happen to them? They'll get all soggy and fall apart. Because don't forget, how did they make these stoves, these ovens that they used? Not metal ovens that they used, instead, right, out of, not necessarily even stone, clay. That's the answer. They used clay in order to do it. So, which was very easy. I mean, after all, you have to do is scoop up some soil and knead it, harden it in the sun and so on, and then, presto, you have the... Right, you have a Pesach Tikkun oven for the Pesachim. So he said to him, listen, you want me to pray for rain? Okay, you better take in your stoves that you use in order to prepare the Korban Pesach so that they don't fall apart because of the wetness, because of the rain. So here's Paliel. He prayed. And guess what? But the rain didn't fall. So what did he do? Og Uga, he made a circle. The Yomar Besaikh, and he stood right in the middle of the circle. The Yomar Fonav. And he said, the Bene Shalaylan Bonechosam Panehem Olai. You know, your children have literally set their faces upon me. In other words, your children look to me, she'ani kiben bayis lefanecha, because they feel that I am like a member of your household. Nishba ani v'shimcha godol. I swear, he says, by your great name, she'eni zaz mekan, that I will not budge from here, ad she'trachem al banecha, until you have mercy upon your children. So what happened? So Yischilu Gishomim Minatim. So rain started in to drip. You know, the word netef and so on, you know, means in the schitz, you know, like a drop of rain. In other words, it just starts coming down just a drop after a drop and gently. So on. Very gentle. And hardly any rain. It's falling, an answer to his prayer, but, with the quantity that's necessary, right? So Omar, so he said to Rabbeinu Shlom, he said, Leikach Shualti, this is not what I asked for. What I want is Ela Gishmi Boro Shechin Ma'oros. I want to have enough rain for the pits, for the trenches, and for the caves. So what happened? Yischilu Leireid Bezav. So the rain started to fall Bezav. Bezav means literally like an anger. In other words, it started to fall with fury, right? With fury. Omar, so again he says, Leikach Shavalti, this is not what I asked for. Elo Gishme Rotzim Brachon Adova. I want to have rain which represent, you know, Rotzim, in other words, that you and people will be happy with, pleased with, rain which will bring blessing, and rain which will be nedava. Nedava in the sense, you know, that they come from you, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, that, you know, with your whole heart, you're granting us this kind of rain. Okay? So, with this statement, Yodu Kesikdan. So then, the rain fell the way it's supposed to. It fell properly. Ad sheyotzu Yisrael miYerushalayim laHarabayis, and so much rain started to come down. There was so much rain, even though it was coming down, you know, nice, and this time, you know, the proper rate of speed, so to say, the proper quantity, but nevertheless, it just kept on raining and raining and raining and raining. To the extent that the people who were in Yerushalayim went up to the Temple Mount. Now, in order to understand this, you have to understand something about Yerushalayim. When we go to Yerushalayim today, we are, of course, visiting Yerushalayim, you know, that has been built up all around the Temple Mount and extending into the modern city of Jerusalem and so on. But in reality, where was Yerushalayim originally built?
City of David.
Yeah, in other words, if you are, let's say, on the southern side of the Har HaBayis, you can look down and you see that there's a very steep hill descending to the Shiloah, to the you know, the pool, the little river that goes over there at the bottom, the little brook over there, and that's where people built their homes. So that we can understand now the imagery of what he's saying over here, as well as the imagery that we have in Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu, remember at the beginning of the second chapter, he speaks about the fact that Dachonia Ha Beis Lakim Barosh Harim, you know, that the house of God will be built at the top of the highest mountain and so on. But what does he mean by house? It means that in Yerushalayim itself, if you look, you're really looking very high up to the Har HaBayis. Because, you know, if you ever go down and then you look up, you understand, you know, a little better, you know, what he's referring to. So therefore, what is the story with Choni HaMagel? The people in Yerushalayim who were there, and, you know, in this area which goes down from the Temple Mount, obviously they were suffering from the rain. The water started to come up. Probably the Shiloah began flowing high, you know, it began over flooding its banks and so on. So as a result, in order to find a shelter, they had to go up actually to the Temple Mount. Bo, so they came, people came, and they said to him, hey, they said, Kishem Shayspalalta Lehem Shayerdu, just as you prayed that the rain should fall, Kach Hispalel Shayelku Lehem, pray that the rain should depart, should go away. Shengenug Omalahem, so he said to them, Oh, Nochdesh, he says, Tzu'ura'u, he says, go and see, Im Nimches Evan Hatoyen, if the rock of the Toyin, I'll come back to that in a second, has become, you know, like melted away, so to speak. Yeah, well, I'll come to that. What does it mean, Hatoyin? All right, so we have a Gemara in Bab Metzia, which tells us that there was a certain rock high, you know, in Yerushalayim over there in the Temple Mount. And or maybe it's just below the Temple Mount, but anyway, it's a very high rock. And there, people either who were lost, that would be Hatoin, or Hatoin, or Hatoan, people who had a claim, if let's say property was lost and you wanted to find the property or something like that, it would be on display, you know, for people. Naturally, they had to come and they had to show proof, also, you know, that it was there. They had to bring proof that it was there. But at any rate, he says to them that see whether this rock has been obliterated as yet. If it has not been obliterated, then in that case, that's it. In other words, don't pray to do it, you know, to stop the rain, right? So this was his answer. Now, of course, what happened was that eventually Rabbeinu Shel Olam, of course, did stop the rain, and everybody was happy thereafter. But one person was not happy. Sholach lo Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach, who was the head of the Sanhedrin, he sent unto him the following message, and he said to him, Il mole choniato, you know, if you aren't choni, you know what? Goes reini olecha nidui, then I would proclaim that you should be put into excommunication, because you had so much chutzpah in addressing the Rabbeinu Shalom. You want the Rabbeinu Shalom to do what you want, right? And you argue with him, you complain with him. Avol ma'aseh lo, but it says, how can I do this to you? She'ato mischate lepnei hamokim, because you, and the question is, what is mischate? Mischate over here in the context means something to the extent, you know, that you nudge the Rabbeinu Shalom, lepnei hamokim, right? You nudge the Rabbeinu Shalom, the yaisa the choritzon cho, and nevertheless he does whatever it is that you ask for. Kevain, just like a son, shehu mischate lo aviv, that, you know, he nudges and keeps on nudging his father, the yaisa lo ritzono, and the father eventually, you know, grants his request. Yolecha kosev omer, now, I can also understand, he says, that there's a pasuk which applies to you beautifully, and that is, Yismach avicha v'imecha v'sogya v'yoladetcha. May your father and your mother rejoice in you, and may she who gave birth unto you be happy. Well, not only can your parents be proud of you, but you're also a favorite of Rabbeinu Shalom that, you know, he forgives the fact, you know, that you nurture him so much, and he grants you your wishes. Okay. Now the Mishnah continues, and it says, "Hayu misanin." If they kept on fasting, the yodo lehem geshamim, and then all of a sudden rain came. Okay. In other words, they had proclaimed a fast day, and they started to fast. All right. And then it started to rain. All right. So what happens? Naturally, talking about fasts, you know, which were there for the sake of rain. Okay. So kodem honesachamo lo yashlim. If the rain falls before honesachamo, which as we learned literally is a flowering in the sun, in other words, before sunrise, you know, when the sun appears on the horizon, then in that case you lo yashlim, they don't have to continue fasting anymore. Of course, they really didn't start the fast yet. I mean, you know. So if it's already raining, in other words, prior to sunrise, then in that case there's no need to fast anymore. Li'achav ha'neitzachama, however, if the rain comes after sunrise, then yashnim, then they have to complete the fast. Okay? This is opinion number one. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, he says a little differently. He says, kodem ha'chatzos, if the rain falls prior to noon, then lo yashlimu.
Noon or midnight? That's
no, it could be, okay.
Okay,
I think it means noon over here. Okay. That makes more sense to me. Because midnight,
yeah.
I mean, would...
wouldn't make sense, because you're going in a consecutive order.
Exactly,
the day.
Right.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, because first we started with Honei Sachamo, right? So now it's Chatzos in the sense of noon. All right. So, he says that if the rain falls prior to noon, lo yashlimu. Then in that particular case, they don't have to fast anymore. But li'acha chatzos, but if the rain first comes after noon, then yashlim. Then in that case, they should complete the fast already for the rest of the day. Masa shegozu tanis b'lod. So now they tell the story about that if tanis was proclaimed in the city of Lod, v'yordu lahem gishomim kodim chatzos, and the rain started to fall before noon. Omalahim Rabbi Tafin, so Rabbi Tafin said to the Eilam, he says, Tzu'u v'yichlu v'shesu v'asu yontav. He says, go out, eat, drink, and make a yontav. V'yotzu v'yochlu v'shosu v'yosu yontav. And, you know, they did exactly what he said, that they went out, and that they ate, they drank, and they made a yontav. Uvo beinu harbayim, not only that, but when it came to later in the afternoon, beinu harbayim, so the Koru Halil Hagodol, they recited the Halil Hagodol. Now, what is the Halil Hagodol? This is Hashem Kitoy Gemchasto, right?
Yeah.
You know, as we learned, that this is said for rain. We had another passage we know where it said, you know, that it should be recited. And others say, you know, that in addition, you know, they, we say like, you know, like part of the nishmas that we say. So we should say that in thanksgiving to the Venish Alelim because, you know, our prayers for rain have been granted. So this is not what we mean, however, by the Hallel that we recite, you know, beginning with Hallelujah, Hallelujah, Dei Hashem, and so on, you know, to Hallelujah, Hashem, Kitayim, Chasdei, at the end, you know, from, you know, Psalms 113 through 118, because that has a different name in the Talmud. That's called Hallel HaMitzri, because it was recited first to celebrate the Exodus from Egypt. This is why we say it on Pesach. And this is why, by extension, we say it, you know, on all the Shalosh Regalim, and then eventually we said it also on Rosh Chodesh and Hanukkah and so on. Okay, I think we shall stop over here tonight. This is the end of the Mishnah, and we'll continue with the Gemara next week.
Yud Tes,
of an Aleph, right, and we'll stop with the Gemara next week.
It's October 5th,
right.
1994.
Right. And we'll meet... All right. So we're now at the Gemara, which is down towards the bottom of Yud Tes, and as we'll see at this particular point, we have for several lines anyway, like a running commentary on the first part of the Mishnah. If we take a look at the Mishnah on the previous page over there. Yeah, the regular Gemara is right there. Okay. So it starts by saying Sedatanu Yosela, right? Home Birviya Rishina, right?
Right.
Smochim Shishona Masrin Alehem Biyad. Okay, which as we learned means that the order of the various fasts that we had, which was related concerning, you know, the first rainy season, Birviya Rishina, and we're going to come back to that in a moment. But if you see that plants have changed their appearance, in other words, that they're like withered away or something like that, you know, and that they no longer look like normal plants, then in that particular case, then Masvin Adhem Biyad, then you're supposed to sound the alarm immediately. In other words, as I explained last week and so on, there are two different opinions. One says it's Tz'oka, crying out to God, and the other one says, you know, that it's true in the sense that you blow shofar. And of course, the conclusion is one doesn't exclude the other. You can do both of them, okay? So, at any rate, this is what you have to do in order to make sure that you know, the situation doesn't get any worse.
How far down would that be in your test?
Right, you go all the way down and you'll see that the word Gemara. You see, it's roughly about seven lines, eight lines in the bottom.
Gimel Mem.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So they quote, first of all, the Mishnah, right? Right, which was the first part of the Mishnah over here, and lo and behold, immediately they throw in an objection, Raminu, and we have a contradiction. What is the contradiction? Contradiction comes from Baraisa. Remember, I explained Baraisa in the past that these were statements that were made by the Tanaitic authorities, but they were never included in the official Mishnah. But nevertheless, they are an important source for us to understand what the text of the Mishnah is, and so therefore the Gemara always makes the tremendous use of Baraisas and Tosefta's and so on and so forth in order to carry on the discussion and try to get at the bottom of what the Mishnah is teaching us. Okay? So Raminhu, they found a contradictory Baraisa. Why is it contradictory? Because it says, Ravi Yoshoina, Ushiniya, Lishol, Mishlishis, Asanis. Which means literally that the first rainy season and the second rainy season and the second rainy season. I don't know what I'm saying. Rainy season. I can't have rainy in my brains. I don't know rainy.
Thinking of rainy.
See, his wife's in the hospital. He's really thinking of the women.
The second one. So anyway, they say Lishol. These periods are there that you should pray to God, literally ask God, you know, in other words, pray. But what would it exclude? Would exclude, of course, fasting. Right. Shlish is the third one, is chisanos, right, is for fasting. Now, this, needless to say, contradicts everything that we've had at the very beginning, right? Where they spoke about, you know, the that we have three series of fasts, right? The first one is Yechidim Esanim and so on, and then after that everybody gets it into the act, but still, right, it's Mibaod Yom, I mean, they fast during the day, they don't have to fast yet during the night and so on. And then when it gets real tough, as we saw, so then, you know, they have all kinds of things besides fasting. They don't do any work. They go out into, they take the Yoren Kodesh into the public square. They listen to Divrei Kavushin, in other words, sermons that are meant in order to turn their hearts to Tshuvin, things like that, and so on. So here, what does it say? It says that the first and the second one, right, you only say prayers during that time, whereas what is the Mishnah imply, you know, at the very beginning of this chapter would begin by implying that the order of these various fasts, you know, which concern, you know, the Rishona, in other words, they apply to the very first one, and to the first rainy season, and therefore, if it applies to the first rainy season, then the implication would be that what? That you have to fast even in the first rainy season, whereas we learned before that only Yechidim, only individuals do, but not the masses. So there's obviously a contradiction between one opinion and the other opinion. Okay? All right. So therefore, they come up and they say, Omer Rav Yehuda, Hachi Kalam. So Rav Yehuda says, now, this is the way we should interpret, you know, the Baraisa together with the Mishnah. And in other words, we can make, you know, a, what shall I say? We can sort of, in Yiddish, the word is an oiskleif. An oiskleif means that.
Oiskleif.
Right. You, they come to a common agreement. This is what I mean by an oiskleif. Okay? Okay? In other words, they will agree that they're really talking about the very same thing. So this is what Rav Yehuda says. Hochikoma. This is really what they mean. It says Seder Tanuyos Omor, right? The order of the various fasts, which has already been described, he says, it's a Mosai. When does it go into effect? He says Bizman Sheyatzora V'Yorishoyna Ushniya Ushlishis Below Yordu Kishonim. This is at a time when the first and the second and the third periods have passed and rain hasn't fallen down. But I have to tell you right now, this is a very technical explanation, because we have to understand that the word Revi'a means more than simply a rainy season at this point. In other words, the word Revi'a is used in a double sense. There is one meaning of the word Revi'a Rishonah, which would mean simply the first period of rain, right? Revi'a Shnir therefore would be the second period of rain, and Revi'a Shlishis would be the third period of rain, okay? But what we learned previously is that the three periods, one would be, let's say, in Cheshvan, another one would be in Kislev, and another one would be altogether in this, you know, as spring is approaching and still rain hasn't fallen, right? In which case you have it. Here, the real meaning of the explanation that he gives is that everything is talking about the Revi'a Rishona, about the very first period, which is what in the Kriya Shema is referred to not as Revi'a Rishona, but it's referred to as Yore, where it says, right? I will cause the rain of your land to fall, right? Yore Umalkosh, right? In Yore we translate as the first rain, and then a Malkosh is the second or the later rain, okay? And concerning what is the early rain, what do we mean by Yorah? So if we take a look back to Daf Vav, okay.
In the Brisa?
Right. So over there, right. They say, Ezohi, to go down two thirds of the way down, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The first interpretation is that Yorah b'mar Cheshvan, right? That the Yorah is the rain that starts in the month of Cheshvan, right? And Malkosh is the month, is the rain that falls when? In Nisan, right? But they say, no, that Yorah is Kislev, right? And then they say, so who are the Chachomim? So the answer is, it still doesn't represent the majority of the Chachomim. All that it represents is a different opinion of several of the different Tanoim. Zesom Rab Chisda and Rab Yossi. Okay. All right. So then they quote, they say, Ezuhi Revi'a Rishona, right? What do we mean by the Revi'a Rishona? In other words, what is the equivalent of Yorah? So as we see, there are differences of opinion. Abechira Bishlosha b'mar Cheshvan, in other words, there is a rain that falls on the third day of Cheshvan, right? Then, Beinonis, the middle one, when does that occur? It's Bishivabo, this is a rain that occurs on the seventh of Cheshvan, right? In Afela, the latter, you know, the later rain, but still part of the Wat, the Revi'a Rishona, right? Is Beshiva Osebo on the 17th, and this is Divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay, so that was his opinion. Rabbi Yehuda, as we see,
what is that? The three rains
that there are three rainy periods within the Yoreh period.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir.
But that was all the Rishon.
But it's still all the Revi'a Rishona, exactly. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he says what? The Shiva, in other words, the first rainy period is on the 7th of Cheshvan, over Yud Zayin, and then on the 17th, right? The first 2 days, of course, were already mentioned before, but then over Esrim Mishloshim, on the 23rd day of Cheshvan. Rabbi Yossi comes along and he gives a different Cheshvan. He says, Uyomer, you know, the Yud Zayin, on the 17th of Cheshvan, over Esrim Mishloshim, on the 23rd, right? And then it goes as far as when? Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Okay? Alright. So, and then it says, V'chein hoya Rabbi Yossi Yomer, and likewise Rabbi Yossi would say that Ein ha-yechidim isanim, right? That these yechidim that we said, they fast, you know, the individuals, the pious individuals who are fasting, but not the masses of the people. Achi yagia Rosh Chodesh Kislev. They don't begin fasting until Rosh Chodesh Kislev has gone by. Right, and Rabbi Chisda said that the halacha is Karabi Yossi. Okay.
Are they saying that the rain must fall on these specific days?
They're saying, right, that they expect the rain to fall on these specific days. Okay? Now, it doesn't mean that the rain will necessarily fall on those days, but these are the three periods within the Revi'a Rishona, right? The first,
so if it rains at any one of those three periods, they consider as having rain during the Revi'a Rishona.
Absolutely. Right, right. All right, now let's get back to our text over here on your test.
Yossi, so it's the 17th and the 20th.
Yeah, 17th, 23rd, and Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Right, right.
So it's a later Yorah.
Yeah, right, right.
Yorah.
Yeah. Of course, I also told you that in Eretz Yisrael, when did they begin saying Kalamotar? On the 7th. In other words, they're already saying it now because tonight is already the 8th. Last night, they already began saying Kalamotar in Eretz Yisrael. So if you have to take a trip to Eretz Yisrael in the meantime, before we begin saying it, naturally daven like an Eretz Yisrael, and you say Talamotar over there.
Okay.
All right.
So back to the Gemara.
Yeah. Now getting back to the Gemara. All right. So now he says that what we say all about, you know, fasting and so on and so forth, he says, Mizman sheyotzu revi'a rishona u'shniyu u'shlishis. Right. If you take the first, the second, the third period within the Revi'a Rishona, the Lo Yordu Geshomim, and rain didn't fall, so then you start into have fast. Avol, Yordu Geshomim b'Revi'a Rishona. Now what happens if, let's say, rain did fall at some time during the Revi'a Rishona, ready to dance for joy and say, good, right? Mm. But they say, wait a minute, maybe it didn't rain enough. Maybe it just gave a little spritz. The Zoru, and so people went out and they sowed the seed, you know, they planted seed, right? The load some cool. And lo and behold, nothing grew. Plants didn't grow. So in that particular case, or Inami, or likewise, another possibility, some cool, maybe, yes, plants did begin to sprout forth, okay? And then the chazal nishtanu, and all of a sudden the plants, as we say, they wither. You know, they literally change the their appearance, their complexion, so that they no longer look like normal plants. Then in that case, what happens? Masriyan alihet miyad. Then in that particular case, you don't wait, but you immediately proclaim fast and begin to say all kinds of special prayers and so on, because you know that things are getting desperate, right? And you have to to take more desperate measures.
So this would be really internecine at this point, huh?
Yeah, but actually he was talking even about cheshvan. That's the point. He was talking already about the Mount of Cheshvan itself. You take a look and you see, or up to let's say Chodesh Kislev, and you see that, you know, even though some rain fell, but it wasn't enough to really give a push, you know, to things that they should begin to grow as normal plants should. Then in that case, you have to begin to recite the special prayers. Omer Rab Nachman. So Rab Nachman said, Dafka Nishtanu. He says, we mean specifically, Dafka means specifically, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a Hebrew word used in Yiddish.
Says, specifically, he says, Nishtanu. We're talking about plants that had changed their appearance altogether, that they no longer looked the way they should normally. Abol Yofshu. But what if the plant simply became dry? So he says, lo. And in that case, you don't have to fast or make special prayers. So they say, pshita. Shouldn't this be obvious? So they say, nishtanu tnan. After all, it says specifically nishtanu, and it doesn't say yavsha. So they say, no. Noch nishto tegir, they say. Not so fast. Leitzricha, you know, when we need this particular idea, it's the akun. Now, akun would be a verb which is made from the word, it's a verb made from the noun koneh. Koneh in Hebrew means a stalk, a reed, a stalk, and something like that, okay? So, let's say that the plant, let's say the wheat, has already produced a stalk, right? Mahu the same of, what should you say, akanta milsahi, that the fact that it has already produced a stalk, this is something substantial, it's something good, even though what? Even though there are no ears of corn or no ears of grain in here, you understand? In other words, just you see corn stalks, you see a corn stalk. I remember we used to sometimes plant corn in our backyard. It was very rare that we actually got an ear of corn. If we had, it was maybe about this big.
You didn't get cross pollination.
We didn't get anything like the kind of corn, you know, that you buy in the stands. But, you know, lots of times, all that we had stalks, but it didn't grow. So this is the kind of situation they're talking about. Maybe there was enough rainfall to give a push in order to form the stalk, but nothing. You know, they didn't have enough moisture in order to produce the kind of grain you know that you need. So in that case, there's no question that Kamashmalon, we learn therefore that what? That you have to begin and do special prayers. Masriyan, it's time to take real heavy action in that case. Okay? As Rashi says over there at the bottom over there, the Okun, first of all, he translates, you know, what does it mean? He says, the Okun says, she'olah b'konim. In other words, that the stalk has grown, she'niskanu m'at l'achash nisyapshu. That, there was a little bit after they had dried up, but still there was something. So he says, ma'u d'seim ha'kantum yosei. What if you say, you know, that, okay, so something substantial to look forward to, the hoyal v'niskanu m'at. Inasmuch as, you know, the stalk has grown a little, im yispalil, if he should pray, bo'ilohim, you know, he would it would help. So kamash malon, so therefore, Rav Nachman comes and he says, da akana lav milsum. In other words, it's nothing, it doesn't mean anything, right? So lo amrinun avol yopshu lo the melech hosman, he says. So in other words, if you see that they only have stalks, you know, then that in itself is nothing. It doesn't mean yet. But if it's yopshu, if the plants have become dry, so in that particular case, you could pray. Why? Because the chances are that, you know, after they've dried up, but the new moisture comes along, you know, then they'll revive. Whereas with the other thing, it could be that, you know, even though, the stalk is there, but that's it. It's never going to come to life. It'll never come to fruition. So Lord Tzricho, he says, the Akun she'olu b'konem, ma'hu d'sim ha'kanto mirsahi, as we said. So the Kavon she'olu b'konem v'adayin le'bishlu, called Tzokin, they still didn't become ripe enough, v'adai yilo masriin sulo gadle. So if we don't shy, then in that case they're not going to grow. So Kamash Malon, he says, therefore he teaches us the lav milsahi. In other words, it's not going to help. The afalgav the okun, even though they've come up in the stalk, but akati godly tvei, they have not really grown enough. All right. So at any rate, the point is again that you have to see, you know, what does it look like, and therefore nishtanu. If they have changed their opinion, then in that particular case, must we be right? Their appearance, right? All right.
Well, who makes the decision on something like that?
Who makes the decision? I would say that the Rav has to call our Besdin together with agricultural experts.
Well, the agricultural experts would come to the Rav and complain, wouldn't they?
Or they could come to him, of course. And you know, they proclaim a fast because of the fact that the conditions simply are no good.
Sure.
So, yeah. All right. Then, v'chein sheposku v'shomim ben geshem legesh. Another case that mentioned in the Mishnah, if you take a look on the opposite page again, of course I'm talking about if you have the big Gemara.
Okay.
It says, v'chein sheposku v'shomim ben geshem legeshem aboyim yom masvein lechem. In other words, if between the last rainfall, right, and 40 days have passed and still hasn't rained it yet, so in that case, what? So masri in alehin. You have to again. Why? It says b'nei shehi makas b'tzoris, because this is the plague that is referred to by the word b'tzoris. In other words, drought.
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 Okay.
Yeah. So in other words, the 40 days passed without rain. And that's what we're talking about during the rainy season. We're not talking about during the non-rainy season.
You're talking about after the first rain.
Right. Or any rain. Right. I mean, let's say it rains during the first season. Right. But then, after that rain, 40 days go by and there is no further rain. So that's bad also.
Right.
And in Eretz Yisrael it could happen.
Exactly.
It could happen, you know, that they have rain, let's say, on Shmini Atzeres or rain on Simchas Torah, whenever, I don't know. Rish Chodesh Cheshvan might rain. And then,
nothing.
A month and a half can go by and nothing happens, you see. And of course, you know, Eretz Yisrael is very, very dependent upon the rainfall. Very dependent upon it. So, that being the case, so they have to begin to say special prayers, Masrin Aleihen, and this is defined as the meaning of the word Batsoris, which means drought. Okay. So, my Makas Batsoris. So, what does it mean, the plague of Batsoris? So, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. So, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, he says, this is Mako, a plague, Shemeviyo Lidei Batsoris, which brings about drought. In other words, the plague is a lack of rainfall for 40 days, right? And what will be the end result of that? The answer is, of course, it'll be Batsoris, it'll be drought. Okay. Omar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman gives further. He adds to it. He says, Nahra anahra betzorta. Medinza amedinza fauna. Alright, now let's explain what that means. What Rachman over here is saying is that, first of all, if it's possible to go from one river to another river in order to import food, into where? Into the area, of course, which has been affected with drought. Then in that particular case, this is drought. But the point is, you can still bring in food from the outside. Still is available, and you know, there's no great effort involved in getting it imported, so to speak, because the riverways of Babylonia, Rav Nachman was a great Babylonian scholar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So in Babylonia they had canals and rivers and everything else, so most of the transportation actually was by means of the rivers and the canals. So if you can't get it here, so you go down the river, let's say 5 miles or something, and you know, you can get food over there. So that, it says, that's Batsota. This is drought. But it's not as bad as what? Medinsa, Medinsa. In other words, if you have to go from one state, so to speak, to another state in order to get it, then this already is kfana. This is hunger. In other words, there's a difference between drought, Batsoras, and kfana, which is hunger. Difference being that hunger is a much more severe business, because it means that food, it becomes much scarcer and it's much more difficult in order to get food to the affected area. Again, I mean, we have to remember, you know, when it says medinsa, medinsa, you know, to us, I mean, to go, let's say, from Massachusetts to Connecticut is no big deal. But in those days, let's say, I mean, if they were, I don't know, let's say in southern Babylonia, and they had to go up to central Babylonia or northern Babylonia in order to get something, it was a mahalach. They didn't have the airplanes, they didn't have the buses, trains, trucks, and so on. Right, right. So it's a problem of transportation. V'yomer Rabbi Chanina, and Rabbi Chanina said as follows. He says, So'o b'sela u'shechicha b'tzot. He says, if you can buy a saw's worth of grain, the saw is like, let's say, like a bushel, so to speak, mm-hmm. Alright? You can buy a bushel of grain for a shekel. Sela is the Aramaic equivalent, you know, for where the Torah would speak about a shekel. You can buy that, but nevertheless, you know, you can easily find it, shekicha, then batzorta. This is drought. In other words, it's drought, but it's not that critical yet, because all that it's done is to what? To raise prices. But if you have the price to raise, I mean, if you have the money that you can buy it, so, you know, it's not that critical yet. It's only the result of drought. But our boy, Velo Shechicha Kfona, says, let's say that the grain is so cheap that you could buy four a seller, which would be a tremendous bargain, right?
Sure.
Yeah. But nevertheless, velo shechicha, you just can't find food on the market, even though the price is low. So in that case, this is hunger. Omer Rabbi Yochanan said, Leishonu ele bizman shamois bezol. In other words, he says, we're talking about when money is cheap, in other words, it's abundant, right? Or pharaohs be yoker, and, you know, pharaohs over here doesn't mean necessarily fruit. Over here it means, in general, let's say, fruit products, all right? Produce, let's say, produce costs a lot. Of all, moos be yoker, let's say that money is scarce, or pharaohs be zol, right? And there is a lot of produce around, but nevertheless, if they don't have money in order to buy it, then in that case, then you have to begin shraying immediately. So as we can see, you can have abundance in the midst of scarcity, scarcity in the midst of abundance. It all depends what we're talking about. I mean, if people don't have the wherewithal in order to buy the food, even if food is available, then it's no good.
So what are you crying out for? You're crying out for money.
You're crying out not for money. But you're crying out to the Bnei Shalom to please give more rainfall and make it possible.
Available.
Right, okay.
So grow your own.
Growing your own,
or
for example. Exactly.
If there's so much food available, you don't have the money, they give you credit. You pay when your crops are soft. You pay for the other person's what you
buy. So if people are not starving because there's no food,
then you
amateur
economic.
I'm just making
it's not that you're praying to the Ubister for rain. I mean, it's a different kind of level of trouble with that.
But nevertheless, the fact of the matter is that people may be so impoverished that they cannot buy the food which is there. I mean, you could have,
I understand that.
What they're saying.
So are we saying then if it rains, then the people
if
will
it
get
rains,
credit.
Then
people will have credit then because their crops will come in and therefore they can buy the food possibly?
Yes, or either they could grow their own food, because we have to realize again, the majority of the people of Babylonia in those days, they were involved in agriculture. They had their own farms, or they would rent a plot of land or whatever it may be, and so on, and they would work as farmers. More people were engaged in the soil than non-agricultural.
Because if there's food there and the people are hungry, the rain is going to come, but it will still take a long time for the food actually to be harvestable.
Yes, but at least there's hope.
Well, isn't there also the implication that these people might have been hit by previous droughts and might also be impoverished because of their failure? It's quite possible.
Right. And this is why, it's more mediocre. In other words, the scarcity of money. People just don't have the money. That's what he means by that. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, and how do we know this? Because Rabbi Yochanan says, I remember. I remember when, for example, you could buy 4 measures for a shekel, right? But nevertheless, b'hava nefisha nefichi kofen b'teferia. The many people were literally blown up with hunger. In other words, like you see the pictures of these kids, who have extended bellies and so on. Of course, they're starving. And this happened in Tveria, but the last Isser, where simply nobody had an Isser. They didn't have a penny to their name. So
they don't explain why they don't have money.
Right. Doesn't say why not, but this is what happened.
Maybe because they didn't have fish or something. If the economy was based on fishing, Tveria.
Were in Tveria? Well, to a certain extent it was,
but there were no tourists coming that year.
But the fact is that they just didn't have money. So, unfortunately. All right. Then, the next thing that the Mishnah said is, let's say that Yordu Tzmochim, right? The Mishnah, in the third line of the Mishnah said, let's say that rain fell for plants, avolo yordu le'ilon, right? But there wasn't enough rain for the trees. Or just the other way around, le'ilon, there was enough for the trees, velo le'smochim, right? But not enough for the plants. Or le'zeh, or another possibility, maybe there was enough rain for both trees and plants, avolo, but not for what? Le'boros, le'shichin, ulama'oros, right? Not enough in order to fill the cisterns and the ditches and the caves. So in that particular case, it says Vasrinat Himyat, and in that particular case, again, you got a shry for rain.
Right.
All right. So this is the next thing that we're now going to discuss over here. So he says, Bishlamo Litzmochim. Okay, we can understand that there may be enough rain for plants, below the ilum, but not for trees. Mashkachasla, you find such a situation when the osa nicha v'lo asya razal, right? When the rain comes gently and it doesn't come violently. Okay? In other words, when the rain falls gently, this is good for plants, okay? But the trees don't get enough moisture from it. Okay. Le'ilon, then case number 2, right? There's enough rain for what? For the trees. Well, all it's mochin. When does this happen? It says, the asya razya, when it comes violently, below asya nicha. Okay? And it does not come gently. Because we said that the plants need gentle rain, and the trees need more forceful rain, okay?
Heavier,
comes with
heavier
a lot of wind,
rain.
Right. Heavier and also more windy or something like that. It seems to stimulate the growth of the trees. Okay, now how about Lazer Lazer? You know, that was case number three, that there is enough rain for trees and plants. Avolola Boris Volola Shechinim Oros. He says, this is Mishkachas law. It happens also the Asya Razya, right? It comes, with force, violently, the Nicho, right? And it also comes gently. In other words, it could be one or it could be the other. But Mihu, nevertheless, Tuvo Lo Asya, it doesn't come in a lot. They don't have a lot of it. In other words, you have enough, let's say, for one or the other and so on, but not enough in order to fill the reservoirs that you need in order to have enough water to drink from and so on. Eloho de Tanya. But where we learn that Yorda Levoros Leshichin Ma'oros Avol Lo Lezeh Lezeh, that there's enough rain to fill the cisterns and to fill the ditches, to fill the caves, but not for trees and plants. How could you have so much rain that it's good, that you have plenty of water to store, right?
And it doesn't,
but it's not good for the vegetation, not good for the plants, not good for the trees. Hechem Ashkachasla, how can you have that? So he answers, the Asya Bishvichuso. This is when it comes all at once, like a heavy downpour, just like this.
Right.
In that case, as we know, we've had rains too, let's say in the middle of the summer it comes, it's a heavy downpour for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or something like that, and then again the sun is blazing away and everything else.
But there's enough runoff to fill the cisterns of the caves.
Yeah, right. For the cisterns of the caves, there is enough water to fill the reservoir, right?
Yeah.
But it's not going to help the plants that we have, or the trees that they have, because there just isn't enough water that they've gotten from it. Okay, let me get a bit of the biter. So in that case, what do they say? They say in that case, if the vegetation is no good and it's everything else, so in that case, must be in the yard. Right. Alright, Tana Rabbanan. Another thing that we learned. It says, Masri and Al Huilonos, Bifros HaPesach, says, we should begin raising the alarm, in other words, have special prayers for rain for the benefit of the trees, Bifros HaPesach, which means literally as Pesach is bursting out. Now, what does it mean by Bifros HaPesach? So Rashi translates it, he says, B'yemei Pesach, during the days of Pesach, Al Doro Shechnim Oros, Avel Yodo Lehen Gishomim. It's for the benefit of the reservoirs of water. If rain hasn't fallen out. However, there's another explanation for Bifros HaPesach is meaning not actually during Pesach itself, but what it means is at the beginning of the season preceding Pesach. In other words, let's say, beginning with Rosh Chodesh Nissan. If you see that there's no rain, not enough rain, so in that case, you have to begin saying special prayers. So for the trees, it's 15 days prior to Pesach. This is the way the average interpretation is. Okay. Al habos v'shichin oros, and how about for the cisterns? So it says afilu b'fros hachag, even at the point, where again, let's say it's prior to the Sukkot, you have to do it. No, Chag over here means Sukkot. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, normally that's what it means. The Al Kulon, but for all of them, meaning trees, plants, etc., and the reservoirs, Imein Lehem Mayim Lishtos. If there isn't enough water to drink, then in that case, what? Masriyan Alehen Biyad. In other words, with our great concern for vegetation and so on, but nevertheless, the primary problem that we have is to make sure that there's enough water for human beings to drink.
Right.
And they say now, V'ezehu miyad shalohen. All right, so what is this miyad that we're talking about over there? So he says, you have to begin shrying and fasting when? Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. On Monday, on Thursday, and the following Monday. The Al Kulon. And for all of them, Ein Masrin Alehem Elo Biyaparcho Shelehem. We only say these prayers in the local area. Parch is, it's like, let's say, the state or something like that.
The parish.
No, it doesn't.
The parish. Where's Parcha? Parish.
No, Hipparchos actually is from Greek. I mean, if you know a little Greek, so well, you know, so the word epi means upon,
right.
And arche means rule. So that Hipparchia means, you know, the area which rules,
rule.
Right, the rules over you or something
isn't
like
that.
Isn't
that where parish comes from?
Yeah?
Isn't that where parish comes from?
No. Parish comes from the Goyim. I don't see the word parish over here.
Well, yeah, parochial. Yeah, all right. Okay. I'll just, it's the same word. Maybe it's the same word.
Okay.
Thank you.
Actually, the word parish is from French, paroisse.
Oh, okay. Thank
all
you.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. If you want to say a parochial in French, you say paroissien.
Thank you.
All right. Mela.
Mela.
Feels better.
All right. So, but the point that he's making over here is, where do you do it? You do it in the area which is affected. But other areas do not have to do it. Of course, this is in contradistinction to something that we learned. I say there's a plague of animals or something else, you know, which is liable to sweep over a larger area.
Yeah.
In that case, everybody is involved. Right. The Askara, and he gives an example of the latter thing that I said. Askara, which is, I say, the English translation is croup, but I think that diphtheria is really a better translation for it, in my opinion. Okay? Why?
Diphtheria.
Because I still remember when I was a kid that this was a problem. My sister came down with it, and I was 5 years old, I remember at that time, and the doctor came and he gave me an injection against the diphtheria and so on. My sister was quite sick for a while until Baruch Hashem she recovered at that time.
You know, you referred to it as a contagious disease. Here.
Yeah, it was a contagious disease, right? And, you know, the effect of it was that it blocks the ability of the wind passage, you know, to breathe. See?
Right,
so that you choke. Yeah, eventually you choke on it. Right, whooping cough could also be quite dangerous.
Yeah.
These are all, I guess, like allied tsoras, you know.
Tsoras, yeah.
Yeah. So Askara says, "Bisman sheyesh bo miso, if people are dying from it, then masrino lecha. Then you have to, you know, to say special prayers for it in order, you know."
Is this because of the drought or because of the lack of water?
Well, it's not necessarily because of drought. It could be for whatever reason.
This can be just a plague.
But
right.
It's a plague. So if it's a plague, then in that particular case, if people are dying from it. Then you have to masrin. You have to shrei gevul concerning it. Bisman she'ein bo miso, but if people are not dying from it, then in that case they masrin aleho. Now, then it says the masrin al hagovai bechol shehu. And but you do have to shrei when you see an infestation of locusts, even the slightest one. Rabbi Shimon ben Elozo Omer, he says af alechoga, not just for govai, which is, you know, the really bad locust, but even for the chogov, they translate sort of